Hello everyone, hello. This year is dedicated L'Ilui Nishmas Rachel Leah Bas Reb Chaim Tzvi. Be'ez Hashem, we're going to be learning the laws of Lashon Hara from Sefer Chafetz Chaim. It's a wonderful Sefer to learn. And we'll be learning the Sefer inside, going through the introduction, all the ideas in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. We'll be learning many of the footnotes of the Chafetz Chaim. When you learn the laws of Lashon Hara, you have to understand that it goes way beyond the technical mitzvos and averos of Lashon Hara. And the Chafetz Chaim points out there are a lot of averos, but it's way beyond that. It's way beyond the mitzvos and averos. When you work on Lashon Hara, it basically affects many areas of your life, way, way beyond. The Chafetz Chaim talks about this, and we'll be emphasizing this, Bezer Hashem, during the classes. So as part of an introduction to see how working on Lashon Hara affects your broader life in general, I want to start with a poem that Rabbi Abraham J. Chorsky has in his writings. Rabbi Chorsky has written many, many svarim. This is taken from his book, From Pulpit to Couch. It's in the source sheet number one, and it's towards the end of the book. He's discussing happiness. He's discussing focusing on the positive in life, the better things in life, not always focusing on the negative. And he says as follows. It's here in source number one on page one. There's an arrow there where it begins. There are so many things we can appreciate. Every day there is a sunset. Some of the sunsets are breathtakingly beautiful and often are visible from our own porches. The sound of the birds singing, the smell of freshly cut grass, the trees in spring blossom, the might and power of a thunderstorm, the smile on an infant's face, relaxing to the sound of music. All these and many more things at our fingertips can be sources of happiness. A blind man was standing on a street corner with a cup, which had only a few coins in it. A passerby wrote a little note and affixed it to the cup. It read, "Today is a beautiful spring day, and I am blind." Soon passersby filled his cup. I came across a poem from an unknown author that I would like to share with you. The park bench was deserted as I sat down to read. Beneath the long, straggly branches of an old willow tree, disillusioned by life with good reason to frown, for the world was intent on dragging me down. And if that weren't enough to ruin my day, a young boy out of breath approached me, all tired from play. He stood right before me with his head tilted down and said with great excitement, "Look at what I found." In his hand was a flower, and what a pitiful sight, with its petals all worn, not enough rain or too little light. Wanting him to take his dead flower and go off to play, I faked a small smile and then shifted away. But instead of retreating, he sat next to my side and placed the flower to his nose and declared with overacted surprise, "It sure smells pretty and it's beautiful too. That's why I picked it here. It's for you." The weed before me was dying or dead, not vibrant of colors orange, yellow, or red. But I knew I must take it or he might never leave, so I reached for the flower and replied, "Just what I need." But instead of him placing the flower in my hand, he held it mid-air without reason or plan. It was then that I noticed, for the very first time, that weed-toting boy could not see. He was blind. I heard my voice quiver, tears shone like the sun, as I thanked him for picking the very best one. "You're welcome," he smiled, and then ran off to play, unaware of the impact he had had on my day. I sat there and wondered how he managed to see a self-pitying woman beneath an old willow tree. How did he know of my self-indulged plight? Perhaps from his heart, he'd been blessed with true sight. Through the eyes of a blind child, at last I could see, and for all those times, I myself had been blind. The problem was not with the world, the problem was me. I vowed to see the beauty in life and appreciate every second that is mine. And then I held that wilted flower up to my nose and breathed in the fragrance of a beautiful rose, and smiled as I watched that young boy, another weed in his hand, about to change the life of an unsuspecting old man. Rabbi Chorsky concludes, "We need only to remind of our blessings to find happiness within our reach in everyday experiences, if we are not blind to them." A beautiful poem. Now, what does this have to do with Lashon Hara? So I think, and we're going to see, that a poem like this, and appreciating life, and having a positive attitude towards life, and appreciating the good things, has everything to do with Lashon Hara. Let's explain. Rabbi Orluch, Rabbi Noach Orluch, in his writings, often talks about the idea of Simchas HaChaim. Simchas HaChaim is very, very important. A person with Simchas HaChaim makes a better friend, you make a better spouse, certainly makes a better parent, positive attitude towards life. People with Simchas HaChaim are more productive. Studies show they tend to be healthier. Simchas HaChaim is very important. So Rav Orluch likes to quote from the Sfas Emes that the Hebrew word besimcha, beis, sin, mem, ches, hey, is the same letters as machshava, mem, chet, shin, beis, hey. The simcha are the same letters as machshava. And very, very often, whether a person is besimcha depends largely on how he thinks about things. Besimcha means happy, be besimcha. Machshava means how you think. So often, whether you're besimcha depends to a certain degree on what's happening in your life and to a large degree on how you view it, how you think of it, how you relate to it. What's your machshava? It's a beautiful vort. Besimcha equals machshava. I once heard a mashal along these lines from Yaakov Neuberger from Bergenfield. And he told the following mashal as follows. He said two women were sick while laying there in the hospital, and they were talking. Elderly women. One of them said, "Oh, Nebuch, I have a difficult life. I have three children. One lives nearby, barely ever visits me, maybe calls once in a while on Friday, barely ever visits. I have a second child who lives out of town further away, and she calls every now and then. Once in a blue moon, she comes to visit. No, what can I do? My kids don't treat me properly. And I have a third child who lives overseas. I never see her. She sends emails once in a while for my birthday, sends pictures. What can I do? My kids don't have enough covered for their parents. They don't respect enough. What can I do? I have a hard life." The other woman in the room said, "Baruch Hashem, I have a wonderful life. I have one child who lives in the city, and she has a large family. And she is very busy. And despite the fact that she's so busy, she visits me every single Friday. And she also finds time to call to see how I'm doing. I have another child who lives further out of town, also has a large family, and she's building a business, and she is so busy, she doesn't have time for anything. And she still finds time to call me. And she works it out with her business when she's visiting, when she's flying to a business meeting, she'll try to work it out to come through our town to see me. And I have a third child who lives very far away. And even though she's far away, I'm on her mind. She sends me emails. She sends me pictures on my birthday, on the kids' birthdays. Baruch Hashem, I have a wonderful life." These two women have exactly the same life. Exactly the same life. Their children treat them exactly the same. And one is happy and one is miserable. This is a major yesod in life. Besimcha is machshava. This is a major yesod. Orluch has it in many of his books. Just because life is not perfect doesn't mean it's bad. Life is not perfect. It doesn't mean it's bad. Life can be very good. Baruch Hashem. It's not perfect, but it can be very good. Baruch Hashem. It's a major yesod. This affects many areas of life. You have a friend. Most people aren't perfect. So you have a friend, and okay, your friend's not perfect, so you're going to focus on the imperfections. No, you're happy. Baruch Hashem, I have a wonderful friend. Kids. Not all kids are perfect. Kids sometimes in the house do very creative things. Something very creative. But they're still wonderful kids. And if you focus on the things that are a little more negative, okay, then you're going to focus on the negative. You can, wonderful, Baruch Hashem. Although life is not perfect, it can still be very, very good. It's a major yisod, this mashal of Neuberger. It brings out the idea of besimcha equals machshava. But the truth is, this mashal is really a gemara. It's a gemara in Brachos, on daf nun ches amud aleph. It's in one of the source sheets. It's source sheet number six. There's an arrow there. And the gemara in Brachos nun ches amud aleph. The gemara is talking about guests. You're a guest at someone's home. The gemara is describing a good guest, a reach tov, versus a bad guest, an reach ra. The gemara says, Oreach tov, mahu omer. What does a good guest say? Kama trochos tarach bala bayis bishvili. Look how much work the bala bayis put in for me. Kama basar hei digufana, kama yain hei digufana, meat and wine, kama gluskos hei digufana, good cakes, v'chol ma shetarcho tarcho l'bishvili, and everything he did, all the work he did was for me. Wow, what a wonderful host that I had. Thank you so much. What does the bad guest say? Ma tarech tarch balabai zeh, what did he do for me? A little bread, a little meat, a little wine. Kol toreach shetarach balabayis zer lo tarach ela bishvil ishto vanav. He was making dinner anyway. He had to buy food for his family. So he threw out an extra piece for me. He did basically nothing for me. The simple pshat of the Gemara is that these two guests received the exact same service from the host. That's how they were treated. The same treatment by the host. The exact same treatment. And one is thankful and happy, and one is sad. That's exactly the mashal of Nuburger, that Gemara. Oh. So what's the idea? How does this connect to Lashon Hara? It connects to Lashon Hara in the following way. Rabbi Pliskin has many books. He has a wonderful book called Thank You. It's a small, softcover book. So back here on the first page of the source sheets, in source number 2, he has a book called Thank You. And there on page 142, he talks about the power of words. He says as follows. The words you speak program and condition your mind. Now he is talking about being a gratitude-filled person. When you speak words of gratitude, you're programming and conditioning your brain and mind to experience more and more gratitude. But he says, the words you speak program and condition your mind. Speaking words of negativity program and condition your brain and mind to experience less and less gratitude and more misery. Then he says, and this is the key, this amazing sentence, your words create you. Your words create you. How you talk creates who you are. And one last thing he says here, you create your habits and your habits create you. You create your habits and your habits create you. If a person speaks Lashon Hara and focuses on the negative, Lashon Hara speakers tend to be negative people. That's just the way it is. They notice the bad here, they notice the bad there. If you're a Lashon Hara speaker, so then you're going to want to, you want to go sell Lashon Hara to someone. So if I see something happen that's not so nice out in the world, I'll notice it, I'll file it away, I'll think about it, I'll absorb it, it's part of my life, and I'll go share it with someone later. That's Lashon Hara. That's terrible. Lashon Hara speakers tend to be negative people, and it affects you as a person. That's the reality of life. And when you work on Lashon Hara, you're not just working on avoiding all the Averas, and the Chafetz Chaim gives a very long list, and we'll be discussing the Averas. It's not just that, it affects the entire person. And if you want to be that person who's the good guest and not the bad guest, If you want to be that person that has a lot of things right in their life and a few things not so good in their life, and they focus on the good things, if you want to be the person in that poem who learns to appreciate a spring day and appreciate being alive and appreciate the good things in life and not be blind to them, a very good place to start is working on Lashon Hara. You work on Lashon Hara, you become a more positive person. That's just the way it is. I have many students like this, and they've told me that when they start working on the laws of Lashon Hara, they become a happier person, a more pleasant person. It's a wonderful thing. Teachers need chizuk. Everyone needs chizuk. Teachers need chizuk too. Once I was listening to a great Rav speak, one of the most famous speakers in the world, one very, very famous speaker. And he said a beautiful shir. And afterwards I went over and I said, oh, by the way, you said that very well. It was written. And I said, oh, who am I to be telling him, that he's such a good speaker and he spoke so well? And he said, no, thank you very much. I need chizuk too. This person gives chizuk to the whole world. He said, no, I need chizuk too. Thank you very much. I need chizuk too. Everyone needs chizuk. So for me, as a teacher, one of the greatest moments of chizuk that I felt is many, many years ago, I taught this idea, and I had a student, and I noticed this student in the course of a few months, this student had begun to point out positive things in people. Point out in shir, point out, oh, good job, thank you so much. And he was always saying positive things, and it was noticeable. It was a change, it was noticeable. He just started talking positively. So I noticed, and I said, you know, that's amazing. You know, where'd you get this from? Like, you know, I really noticed a change. You tell this person it's good. This is good. That's good. Thank you so much. Oh, all the positive. Thank you for sheer. All these positive things. And he said to me, you know, Rebbe, a few months ago, you quoted Rav Pliskin, you quoted Rav Orlowick, and I took it to heart. And I tried to become a more positive person. I couldn't believe it. It's tremendous. What a chizuk. You know, these are beautiful ideas here. Right, Pliskin of Orlik, the simply equals Machshava, and this guy became a more positive person because, you know, he was inspired by this idea. Gave me tremendous chizuk. Everyone needs chizuk. Now, this idea that when you work on Lashon Hara and you become a more positive person and you try to find the good in things, this doesn't mean that you're naive and you go through life with blinders on and people keep the laws of Lashon Hara, they get in trouble because they don't notice bad things. No. No, the Torah doesn't believe that you have blinders on and you're hurt here and hurt there. No. There are rules of Lashon Hara L'Toelis. When it's mutter to speak Lashon Hara, we'll be discussing those. My Rebbe Rav Shechter Shlita, when he discusses the Chafetz Chaim Sefer, he points out, he says, most of us know what's Asr in Lashon Hara. The Chafetz Chaim's Chiddush is, he points out what's mutter. And many things in mutter. And the classic case of Lashon Hara, which is mutter, is when there's a benefit to protect yourself from something. So things that, if you need protection, of course that's mutter. So this idea of being positive, focusing on the positive, it doesn't mean you go out with blinders on. It doesn't mean you're naive. No. It means you focus on the positive and you're a more pleasant person. And when it's mutter, it's mutter. But if it's not for Tovelos, then it's Aser. So this is one of the examples. There are many examples like this. As we go through the Sefer, we're going to see over and over again many examples like this. Where a person keeps the laws of Lashon Hara, and the Chafetz Chaim himself emphasizes this in his introduction. When you keep the laws of Lashon Hara, it makes you a different person. It doesn't only affect this, it doesn't only affect speech, it affects your life, it affects many, many other areas of life. Okay, so that's the first step of the introduction. Now, the Chafetz Chaim wrote many Sfarim, and the Sefer Chafetz Chaim that we'll be learning is the first Sefer which he wrote and which he published. But he wrote many, many Sfar. And if you look at the list, I have a list here. It's in the source sheets, number source sheet page 5. If you look, just take a look at the list here. He wrote the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. Then he wrote the Sefer Shmiras HaLashon. Shmiras HaLashon is supposed to be, the Chafetz Chaim meant it to be in a second part of the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. Like they're supposed to be learned together. That's why they're normally published together. For this class, we'll be using the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. It's good to have that Sefer. When you buy the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, most of the editions have Shmiras HaLashon in the Sefer as well. And we'll be quoting things from the Sefer Shmiras HaLashon. So when you get the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, you want to make sure to get the Sefer that also includes the Shmiras HaLashon as well. And most of it happened. Okay. Then he wrote the Mishneh Berurah that we know, 6 volumes on Halacha. He wrote a Sefer called Nidcha Yisrael, which he wrote to the Jews in America to help keep them strong in their Avodas Hashem. He wrote Likutei Halachos. Likutei Halachos is a fascinating sefer. It's about the halachos of Kachin. When in the Gemara, so the Rif is one of the great Rishonim, and the Rif wrote an explanation on the Gemara, all the Gemaras that are halachos l'maisa nowadays. Like the Brachos, the laws of Davening, the laws of Shabbos, everything has halachos l'maisa nowadays. The Rif didn't do Kachin, because Kachin, we don't have the base of Mikdash, so it's not Lamaisa. So the Chafetz Chaim was very involved in the idea of let's be ready for Mashiach. And if Mashiach's going to come, we have to be ready. So one way to be ready for Mashiach is to learn the laws of Kachim and know them very well. So the Chafetz Chaim wrote basically his own papers, like the Rif, on the different laws of Kachim and the Karbanos. Very fascinating work. That's the Likutei Halachos. And many others for him as well. Now, There's a theme here to the way the Chafetz Chaim went about writing Sfarim. There's an approach he had. There's an overarching theme. I saw it first in the Sefer Emes Liakov, which we'll be discussing Mirch Hashem soon, from Rav Yochav Kamenetsky. And later I found it's in the biography of the Chafetz Chaim. There's a wonderful biography on the Chafetz Chaim, published by Art Scroll, written by Rav Yosha, a Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim. And we'll be reading from that as well. And there's an approach here, there's a theme that runs through the writings of the Chafetz Chaim, which really was like his guide for what he chose to write, what he chose to publish. And I want to introduce that theme by working through a major essay in the Sefer Emes Liakov. This will be our introduction in general to the writings of the Chafetz Chaim. And we'll see in particular, this theme really directly applies to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim that we'll be learning together. So let's begin with the Sefer Emes L'Yaakov. It's pages 2 and 3 of the source sheet. Okay, the Sefer Emes L'Yaakov is Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's Sefer on the Chumash, and very, very deep ideas, short ideas, long ideas. That's Rav Yaakov. Okay, so source number 1 in page 2 is Rav Yaakov starting in Parshas Vayetze. Well, so Rashi at the end of Toldos works out the numbers, works out the math. How old was Yaakov when Vayetze begins? So if you look in the Chumash, it works out the numbers, he's 77 years old. But if you look back at the end of Toldos, he was only 63. There are 14 missing years. So Rashi here quotes the famous Medrash that Yaakov Avinu, when he was running away from Esav to go to Laban's house, his parents sent him away. Yaakov Avinu spent 14 years learning the Yeshiva Shein Ve'Eper. And that's the missing 14 years, from 63 to 77. Okay. Now, so Yaakov says, Chazal Mosrim Lanu, Sheb Emes Nenash Yaakov, I'm reading the underlying parts in source number 1. Sheb Emes Nenash Yaakov, Al Zeh Shehitrashel B'Kibir Ave'en, Ulechem Yosef Nedar Mi Beso, Esrim V'Shanayim Shana, Aval Arbas Rishana Hayat Beis Shem Ve'Eber, Lo Nenash Yaakov. Chazal tell us that Yaakov spent 22 years in Laban's house, away from his parents. His parents missed him, it was difficult. So Chazal say that Yaakov was punished for that. He could have maybe worked out in a faster way. So since Yaakov spent 22 years away from his parents, he was punished that Yosef was lost from Yaakov for 22 years. Mita keneged mita. But these 14 years, v'yeshiva shein ve'eder, he wasn't punished for. So apparently those 14 years were okay. In other words, Yaakov was away from his parents for 36 years, but only for 22 years was he punished, with the corresponding Yosef being away from Yaakov for 22 years. So those 14 years were okay. And that's what he says. So apparently he was supposed to spend those 14 years. Rabbi Yaakov continues, Uvehechrech, it must be, Sheshanim Eilu, Bebeis Talmudo Shel Shein Ve'Eber, Hayu Kokach Nechutzim, they were so important, Lit Patchuto, to Yaakov's development, Haruchanit Shel Yaakov, Ad Sheim Tochim Es Inyan Kibur Ave'en. So these 14 years are docha the idea, they pushed away the idea of kibud ava'im. Yaakov was allowed to spend these 14 years. Now, Rabbi Yaakov now raises a fascinating question against what Yaakov Avinu did. Fascinating. And the answer to this question that Rabbi Yaakov is going to present now, the answer to this question is a major yesod in life, a major yesod in education. It applies to education, it applies to parenting, it applies to how you write Sfarim. And this major Yisod, we'll see, runs through all of Chumash Brachos, from the beginning till the end, all of Chumash Brachos. And this major Yisod that Rabbi Yaakov is going to develop now to answer this question also is an introduction, exactly, an exact introduction to this, to the way the Chafetz Chaim wrote a Sfarim, to the Chafetz Chaim's approach to writing Sfarim. Okay, so let's begin. So I'm continuing now in source number 1 in the Emes L'Yaakov. It's a question. Hare Yaakov Dizman Shiyotzim Liber Sheva, Hayim and Shishim Vishalosh, Hu Lama Tori Im Avram Zikeno Agil Chameshisre, Uvashar Shanim Hu Lama Dishivaso Sho Yitzchak. Yaakov Avinu was 63. He's been learning his whole life. He learned by Avram till around the age of 15, and then he learned by Yitzchak for another 48 years. Yaakov's learned for 63 years. He's learned a lot of Torah already. So Madua Im Kain, Hayal kolkach nachutz liYaakov achshav, bimkom lehakshiv with sibuyov shel horav leishet beis lov and yomim achladim lasheves fil lilmod od arbas rishonav yeshiva zu. Why was it so crucial for Yaakov to learn another 14 years? His parents said, "Don't come back." So apparently, the 14 years he was supposed to spend there. Why? He learned 63 years. Yaakov needed these extra 14 years. Apparently, he did. Because these 14 years, he wasn't punished for. These 14 years must have been necessary for his development. He was supposed to spend those 14 years. But why were they so necessary? He'd already been learning for 63 years. This is a great question. This is a kasha against what Chazal, it's a kasha on what Chazal say. How could it be that Yaakov wasn't punished for these 14 years? How could that be? Why wasn't Yaakov punished for these 14 years as well? And Rabbi Yaakov gives a beautiful mashal. Halumah ha-derbadome. What is it similar to? Le'av ha-metzave le'vno le'knos mashal b'shvilo. A parent wants you to buy something. Let's say for dinner. It's 6 o'clock. It's time for dinner. Let's say you live in Kew Garden Hills. It's time for dinner in Kew Garden Hills, Queens. 6 o'clock. Wait a second. You need milk for dinner. No milk in the house. Oh. So yeah, son, my dear son, Yosef, please go buy me some milk. Okay. B'derech lachanus. Machlita ben shu rotze lilmot Torah. U'misiyashe beis medrash lilmot Torah. Haim achshav azman lilmot. And on the way to buy the milk for dinner at 6 o'clock, he sits down to learn. You live in Kew Garden Hills, Queens. You're walking down Main Street. Wonderful yeshiva in Kew Garden Hills. You're walking down Main Street. You see on the right, beautiful yeshiva. Yeshivas Or HaChaim, wonderful Yerushalayim stone. Wonderful, beautiful colored windows. Hey, I want to learn now. You're on the way to Wasserman's to buy the milk. You sit down, you stop and learn for 2 hours in Or HaChaim. Wonderful. Wonderful. Leave it. 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock, you come out. You go on the way to buy the milk at Wasserman's. Wasserman's is normally open late. And you're on the way to Wasserman's. Wait a second. In the last couple of years, there's another new big yeshiva in Queens. Chafetz Chaim's in Kew Garden Hills. Chafetz Chaim's in Kew Garden Hills now. 8 o'clock, you stop by Chafetz Chaim. Another 2 hours. 8 to 10, it's 10 p.m. You've had two wonderful seders of learning. You go to Wasserman's, it's still open, it's open late. You buy the milk in Wasserman's, 10 o'clock, and you walk back home to your house. You walk into the house, 10:15. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. And they say, Yosef, where were you? What do you mean? And here's the milk. Yosef, it's 10:15. Oh, Mom, I stopped to learn. I stopped to learn Or HaChaim. I stopped to learn Chafetz Chaim. Here's the milk, Mom. Yosef, we wanted the milk for dinner at 6 o'clock. You don't spend 4 hours learning when it's time for dinner at 6 o'clock. Your parents said, milk is for now. The dinner is now. So it's wonderful to learn, but you don't. The mitzvah now is to go buy the milk and bring it home for dinner. So your parents ask you, the mitzvah derisa, keep it avaim. You're not allowed to learn Torah now. When you have a mitzvah right now that no one else can do, that's when you don't learn. A mitzvah, shi'ef shalash sa'ideh achirim. That's what Rabbi Yaakov says. Hatam v'torah nitcha medical mitzvah, shi'ef shalash sa'ideh achirim. So, you can't do that. You're not supposed to learn for 4 hours when you're on the way to buy milk for dinner. This is a tremendous kasha. What's going on? Why was it appropriate, apparently it was appropriate for Yaakov to learn those 14 years. Why isn't it like that mashal that your parents send you at 6 o'clock to get some milk, and you come back at 10:15 after you learn for 4 hours. Why? That's Rabbi Yaakov's question. It's a great question on this whole approach to the life of Yaakov. And the answer to this question is a major yesod, as we will see. Okay. Rabbi Yaakov says like this, Kedei lohavin es hanechitzut v'hadechifut shel Yaakov leches achshav v'shivasoch shein v'heber. In order to see and understand the necessity, the importance of learning the Shein Be'er Dafka now, learning that yeshiva, anu tzrichli mikodem lohavin es ha-Torah ha-miyuchedes shenilmadov beis mishosh shosh be'er. We have to understand the unique Torah that was taught, the special Torah, the yeshiva Shein Be'er. And Rabbi Yaakov now develops a whole approach that the yeshivas, which Avraham Yitzchak had, were different in their style, as we'll see, in the yeshivas which Shein Be'er had. They were a different type of yeshiva. The atmosphere was different, and the curriculum was different. The yeshivas of Avraham and Yitzchak were different than Shein Be'er. The atmosphere was different, and the curriculum was different as well. People tell me that sometimes I have a tendency to repeat myself. People tell me that sometimes I have a tendency to... Okay, that's fine. Now, Ha'avos ha'yoshtim b'yeshiva. The avos sat in yeshiva. U'marbitzim Torah l'kol ha'ba'aleim v'sachif b'anachulasam. The avos had a yeshiva. They had an empire. Be'beis midrasham shalo avos lomdu Torah b'madrega g'dola b'yoser shamuna b'vodos Hashem. Mechusanim l'gamrei me'asfiva b'chutz v'lo m'shvayim menakwa. The yeshiva of the avos, there were no outside influences. They controlled the environment. Picture a yeshiva, picture a big yeshiva outside of the city, past the city limits. The yeshiva controls the environment. They control who comes in. They control what comes in. And they control the whole environment of the yeshiva. A very pure environment, totally cut off from the rest of the world. That's the yeshiva. That's the description that Chazal give of the yeshiva of Avraham Yitzchak. Oh. So that yeshiva, so they learned Torah. They learned Torah, pure Torah. And they learned. Next paragraph. Lo chein haya etzel shein be'ever. The yeshiva of Shem ve'Aver was different. Shem and Aver were the survivors. Survivors of Dor HaMabul. Survivors of Dor HaFlaga. Rabbi Yaakov here is developing that they didn't develop a yeshiva like this. They developed a yeshiva of how to survive when the entire outside world is corrupt around you. He continues. Rak Shem ve'Aver, Seridim mitoros umisvivos mushchasim. V'lo Avram v'Yitzchak. Hayucholim lil Shein ve'Aver in their yeshiva. Imagine having a yeshiva in the middle of Times Square. You have an apartment building, go down one floor, and that's your yeshiva. You're right there in the middle of the outside world. It's a different atmosphere, a different environment. Very hard to control everything that comes in and comes out. And in that yeshiva, what are you going to talk about? What are you going to teach? You're going to have a curriculum that focuses on the challenges a person faces when he's mamish directly involved in the outside world and tumas all around him. And Shem ve'Aver, Shem survived Dor HaMabul, Aver Dor HaFlaga, they were suited to do this. In the yeshiva of Shem ve'Aver, they had a different curriculum than the yeshiva of Avraham and Yitzchak. Rabbi Yaakov later on has a term for this, and this is the title of this yesod. It's the bottom left of source sheet 2. It's double underlined. Rabbi Yaakov calls this Toras HaGolus. The Torah of how to survive when you're in Golus, how to survive when you're in a difficult environment, and you don't control, you don't fully control your environment, you're right there in the outside world. That was the yeshiva of Shein Ve'Aver. They taught Toras HaGolus. Now, it's very important to emphasize that no, the Torah is perfect. The Torah doesn't change. But the idea here is that the perfect Torah, you have a different curriculum based on the audience, based on the student body that you have, based on the type of yeshiva. The Torah is the same, but the curriculum might change based on the needs of the students, of the Talmidim in the yeshiva. That's the idea of Torah's HaGolus. So Rabbi Yaakov writes as follows. Yaakov Avinu for 63 years was living with his grandfather, with his father, in a totally pure environment, in Yitzchak Avinu's home. And now, for the first time in his life, Yaakov Avinu is heading into the outside world. And where was he going? He was going to Lavan. Lavan's whole society, Lavan was corrupt, Lavan was immoral. And Rabbi Yaakov points out, it was everyone was there, the Chazal say, they were all tricksters and all corrupt. And Yaakov Avinu was heading into the outside world. And Yaakov Avinu felt that he needed a heavy dose of Toras HaGolus in order to survive in the house of Laban. The Torah he learned in Yeshivas Avraham Yitzchak was a wonderful, perfect, pure Torah. But the curriculum didn't emphasize, didn't focus on how to survive in this more difficult, challenging environment. But in Shein ve'Aver it did. So Yaakov Avinu felt, I need those 14 years of Yeshiva Shein ve'Aver in order to get ready to survive in the house of Laban. Now, how does this fit into Kibud Av V'Aim? Because, Rabbi Yaakov explains, clearly, Yitzchak and Rivka, they wanted Yaakov to go to Laban's house and come back what? As the same Tzaddik, as the same Yaakov. That was implicit, that's obvious. When Yitzchak and Rivka said to Yaakov, go to Laban's house and stay there and come back, clearly they meant, stay there, don't be influenced by the outside society, don't be influenced by Laban, stay the same Tzaddik you are, and then come back. Bevadai, lo hayu hori Yaakov rotzim sheyedech l'lavan, im besofo shel davar, lo yuchal lotzeis misham u'lehachriz, im lavan garti, im lavan rosh garti, v'tagim mitzvah shemarti. They didn't want to go there if he wasn't going to stay the same Yaakov. So implicit in their command for Yaakov to go to Levin's house was, go there, stay strong, and come back. Oh, So now, that's why Yaakov had to go. It became part of the command that his parents gave. So when Yaakov went to Yeshiva Shein Ve'Eber, he was fulfilling an implicit part of what his parents asked him to do. This is amazing. Let's continue. Achshav, Ein Zedom Ela Le'av Shetziva Livno Liknosno Hula Ve'esro Lesukot. Your parents asked you to buy a lulav and esrog for Sukkos. Good, you're on the way to buy the lulav and esrog. Then you say, wait a second. I don't know the first thing about the laws of lulav and esrog. So on the way to buy the lulav and esrog, wait a second. I have to stop. I have to learn the svarim about the laws of lulav and esrog, and then I'll be ready to go and buy the lulav and esrog for my parents. The parents didn't say, go stop and learn, but clearly it was implicit in what your parents said. They want a kosher lulav and esrog. So if the parents say, go buy a lulav and esrog, they mean, go buy a kosher one. If you don't know what's kosher, what's not, so then you have to stop and pick up and learn what's kosher. So you're walking to buy the lulav and esrog, and you stop to learn the halachos of lulav and esrog, and it takes a long time. That is part of fulfilling the mitzvah of kibud av v'em. So Rabbi Yaakov says that's what Yaakov Avinu was doing. The 14 years of Yeshiva Shein Ve'Eiver was an implicit part of his parents' command, and that's why he wasn't punished for it, and he was supposed to do it, and that's Torah Agamos. It's a major yesod in life. Major yesod. This applies to, let's say, you're a principal. You're a principal of a school. You have to know your student body. You know, if you're a principal of a school in the middle of Bnei Brak, or you're the principal of a school in a city in the middle of the United States, far from the natural Torah centers, you're going to have a different curriculum because the challenges which your students face in one place are going to be different than the challenges your students face in the other place. So the Torah is perfect. The Torah stays the same. But the curriculum, what you emphasize, is going to be different. This is a major yesod in education. And as we'll see in a few minutes, Bezat Hashem, it's a yesod also in parenting, and it also applies to writing sefarim, it applies to the Chafetz Chaim. Okay. So this is Torah Segolas. It goes from Shein Ve'Eiver down to Yaakov. But it goes much further. Much further. There's a fascinating Rashi. The beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. Still on page 2 of the source sheets, the left column that's underlined, on page 2 of the source sheets, the left column. The Torah writes that Yaakov loved Yosef the most. Why? Kiven zikunim hulo. What does that mean exactly? So one shot Rashi gives is that he quotes from Unculus Barchakimwe that Yaakov learned a lot of Torah with Yosef, a lot of Torah, and that's why he loved him the most. And Rashi, quoting from the Medrash, says, Kol ma shelamad mishein ve'ever musar lo. Whatever Yaakov learned the yeshiva shein ve'ever, he passed along to Yosef. Fascinating. Why Yeshiva Shein Ve'Eiver? Yaakov learned a lot by Avram and Yitzchak. Rashi is emphasizing, clearly emphasizing, that when Yaakov learned with Yosef, he honed in on, he focused on the Torah he learned by Yeshiva Shein Ve'Eiver. Why? Why dafka that Torah? Madua diktek Rashi lomar kolma shalom and Yeshiva Ve'Eiver. What about the Torah Sahavos? Rabbi Yaakov asks. So here, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says a beautiful vort. And there's a story here that goes with the vort. Oh. He writes here, Kabbalah haya biyadam, mipi Avram, shetzvichim heim adayin lichyos be'eretz lolem v'abnu v'inu osam. Hashem gave Avram a nevuah that his descendants are going to go into Golas, be'eretz lolem, and they're going to be in Golas somewhere. That was in the family. That was the family's nevuah. Hashem to Avram, and Avram told the family. And Yaakov felt a responsibility. I have to prepare my family, my kids. This is going to come eventually. This is a nevuah. There's going to be a nevuah. There's going to be a gullus, maybe my children, my grandchildren. They have to be ready. So Yaakov wanted to prepare his children for the gullus that he knew was coming. Now, this is the key. This is an interesting comment. Umikevan she Yosef hayazeh. Shehiskal gel v'svivas harashoyim v'yitzarich lamod levado negakol anisyonu she'omdu lo. etc. Hayakov muchrach limsor dafka lo es Torah miucheres hazos. Somehow, this we have to discuss. Somehow Yaakov understood that Yosef was going to be the one who was going to end up by himself amongst the Rishayim somehow, and therefore Yosef is going to need this Torah Hagolus in order to maintain his strength against the Nisyonos, the challenges of the outside world. So therefore Yaakov Dafka taught Yosef Torah Shein Ve'Eber. Okay. Fascinating idea. Beautiful idea. That's the Pshat in Rashi. What's a little bit unclear is, how did Yaakov know it was going to be Yosef? How did Yaakov, it ended up it was Yosef. We don't find that Yaakov had a nevuah that Yosef was going to be the one to lead them into Galus. So somehow, if Yaakov is assuming that Yaakov Avinu understood that somehow Yosef was going to lead them into Galus, and therefore Yosef would need the Torah HaGalus, Torah Shein Ve'Eber, more than the brothers, he taught him Torah HaGalus. It's unclear. How did Yaakov know this? Okay. So around 12 years ago, this question bothered me for a long time. Around 12 years ago, I'm at a wedding in Brooklyn, a wedding of a student. And I walked in, and I had a card with my table, my number on it. Okay. I walked to my table, and there were no seats at the table. Okay, whatever it was. Maybe someone sat at the wrong table by mistake, or whatever. They pulled a chair over, there were no seats there. Okay, so I can't sit at the table. I can't sit at my table. Okay, so I'm stuck. So I wandered around to another table. I found another table. It was pretty empty. I don't want to take somebody else's seat. It was pretty empty. I sat down at another pretty empty table. A rough person, looks like a rough comes, sits down. Very friendly person. Hello, talks to everyone. How are you doing? Talks to everyone, introduces himself. I pick up from the conversation, this person at the table is one of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's children. And he's here at the table. So Baruch Hashem, I lost my normal seat, and I'm here, and I'm sitting with one of Rav Yaakov's sons. He asks me who I am. He says, hello. I tell him I'm a teacher. And I said, here's my chance. So I said, and by the way, I teach this idea from MSV Yaakov, and I discussed this point, and I have this question that, it's just a little unclear. How did Yaakov know that Yosef would be the one to lead them into Mitzrayim? So Yaakov's son said to me, he said, I discussed this with my father. That was very exciting. I'm very happy that person took my seat. I discussed this with my father, and he said the following idea. There's a medrash that says that Yaakov viewed Rachel as his primary wife, the ikar. The Torah calls Rachel an akara, barren, she can't have children. I am kuf reish hei. The medrash says, we'll see in a few minutes, Bezer Hashem, ikar, the primary wife, the main wife. So since Yaakov viewed Rachel as the main, the ikar, the primary wife, Yaakov assumed that the leadership of the next generations is going to come through Rachel's children. And therefore, he thought it would be Yosef, and therefore he dafka taught Yosef Torah Shein Ve'Eber. It's a beautiful idea, beautiful. It's not here exactly. It's not fully pointed out here in the Sefer, but that I heard from Rabbi Yaakov, one of his children. He said Rabbi Yaakov, they discussed that. But that's a medrash. That medrash I have here, it's page 4 of the source sheets. It's underlined on page 4. The Medrash says, "V'rachel akara, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Rachel haisa ikaro shel bayis, the mainstay of the house." As it says, "Rachel akara ikaro Rachel," and the Medrash goes on to say, "Rachel haisa ikaro shel bayis shekol hadvarim hatzuyin b'rachel." Excuse me. Shekol hadvarim tzuyin b'rachel lefichach nikru Yisrael ashma Rachel mevaka al baneha. It's a Medrash. In Medrash Rabbah of Gracious, Parsha Ayin Aleph. So this Medrash adds a lot to this Yesod and the Emeska Yaakov. Yaakov somehow understood that Yosef would be the leader. He's the son of the primary wife, and therefore he taught Yosef the Torah of Golus, the Torah of Shein Ve'Eber. And then Rabbi Yaakov's son went further, and he told me that Rabbi Yaakov used Torah HaGolus in raising his children. And he said there were certain things that our father told some of the kids and not the others. Certain minhagim, he said, there were certain minhagim. My father told one of my brothers, you should do this, and the other one, he didn't say to do this. Because of this idea. In other words, Rabbi Yaakov looked at his own children, and based on their needs, his curriculum changed. To one, he emphasized a certain minhag, and to others, he didn't. Amazing. That's Torah HaGolus. This is a major yesod in life. The Torah is perfect. The Torah stays the same. But the curriculum changes based on the needs of the student body. And that's Torah Segolas from Shem Be'ever down to Yaakov. And so far we've seen from Yaakov down to Yosef. And we've discussed how this applies educationally, running a school. We've discussed how this applies, you can apply with one's own children, that you might tailor the education based on the needs of the child. That's Torah Segolas. Now, we're gonna stop in a minute, and just to review and prepare ourselves for the next class. So we're learning the laws of Lashon Hara from the Chofetz Chaim, and we're going to develop the idea that beyond the technical halachos, the do's and don'ts and the averos, it affects your whole life. It changes you as a person. A person who's careful with Lashon Hara ends up being a more positive person, a more pleasant, a happier person in many, many ways, a more positive person, a person who appreciates life and is happy when is happier, even when things aren't perfect. A less negative person, Lashon Hara speakers, negativity clings to them. And we're going to learn to avoid that and affect our whole lives, Bezus Hashem. That's one idea. Secondly, we discussed that the Chofetz Chaim, there's a certain approach to his writings. And we're going to see, Bezus Hashem, next class, that the approach to Chofetz Chaim's writings is exactly Torah Segolas. This is sort of Rabbi Yaakov. So far we've developed from Shem Be'ever down to Yaakov, down to Yosef. We'll see, Bezus Hashem, next week, it's even before Shem Be'ever. It goes beyond Yosef, as we'll discuss with Hashem next week. And this will be an introduction to the approach of the Chofetz Chaim to how he wrote, how he chose to write his Sfarim, and in particular, an introduction to the Sefer Chofetz Chaim itself. Okay, we'll stop here.